Number 1323291 CV Power Exploration LLC versus Sun Exploration Inc.
Your Honor, may it please the court?
Yes.
My name is Dave Pennington. I'm the attorney representing Power Exploration LLC. There's a defendant in this case out of Kimball County. What this is a feel of is a denial of a motion to compel arbitration. There was an October 25th, 2000 joint operating agreement between Power Exploration and the previous operator. I think the record shows that Sun acquired operation in 2016. Power's alleged, I mean, Sun's alleged in their lawsuit, measured for the plaintiff to file the lawsuit, that they sent all these invoices, Power didn't play. Now remember, Sun's the operator, and these are oil and gas. They're producing oil and gas wells, and they're selling it to Genesis. They get the money, and 10% of this money is supposed to go to Power. Not none of it goes to Power, and Power didn't get any invoices for expenses. Anyhow, they get sued. On June 27, 2019, Power gets sued by Sun in Jim Wells County. All the wells, and there's six wells, in the base of the suit are in San Patricio County. The lawsuit is basically filed, and no real action is taken on the lawsuit. Really until 2023. I know Sun has put in their brief, well, we have these 37 different things that, you know, have been done, and when you look at it, it's a little bit overwhelming. But when you break it down, and I did, in 2019, there's eight things of the 37. In 2020, there's three. In 2021, there's none. The vast majority of the actions that is determined is in 2023. And then they say, well, you know, because you didn't file the motion to compel arbitration until 46 months have gone by, you impliedly waived it by substantially invoking the judicial procedure. I put it to you this way. This is a case that really stood dead until not 46 months, but until February of 2013.
But didn't you agree to a trial setting at a docket control conference?
There was a docket control conference, and we did. But at the time, we still hadn't received the joint operating agreement or any of the invoices.
So I have a question about that, because you do say in your brief that they hid the agreement and then produced it down the road. But isn't this something that you all had in your possession? I mean, you were a party to the, and of course, I mean, your client Power was in possession of this contract because they were a party to the contract. And
I know there's case law out there that says impliedly you sign it, you're in possession of it. But remember, this is October 25th, 2000. Contract. So it's a contract at the time. It's over 23 years old. And I asked for it, and we didn't get it. But when we get the discovery, and the discovery you'll see in there is like, well, in our office in Jim Wells County, you don't look at it. But I'm in San Antonio. You know, I didn't get it until in February 2023 when the, I think this is the timeline that I think is important. I did a timeline for the brief on April 27, 2023, Sun filed a motion for a summary judgment. And they attach in their summary judgment as Exhibit A the joint operating agreement that contains this arbitration clause. 2 days later, on April the 19th, that's when we filed the motion to compel the arbitration.
But don't you, isn't it, I mean, looking at the timeline that was provided to us, that even in January 2020, Council for Power already had mentioned the JOA, and that you had also requested discovery, and you'd answer discovery invoking the JOA in 2020. So you must have known something about it, you being your client, of course.
Well, no, I mean, we really didn't, and we didn't receive a copy of this until the motion for summary judgment was filed. And then when it was, that's when we read it to prepare a response to the summary judgment and realized that there was this arbitration clause, and then did the research on what that means. And the, I know it's an older case of 2018, but I attached it in the appendix, and I think it's still the law, the Perry versus Cole. The Supreme Court has only ruled one time that a person has waived the arbitration clause. I thought it was interesting in the facts because that was a 5-4 decision, so it kind of barely got by. I mean, if one person changes the vote, it doesn't get by. But in a 5-4 decision, they found waiver, and that this was the only time they found waiver. And it was a situation where the plaintiff, the person who actually picked the forum, moved for arbitration and appealed the denial of the arbitration. When the defendant initially filed the motion to compel arbitration, and the plaintiff who asked for the arbitration ultimately opposed the arbitration vigorously, won that ruling in the trial court, and then later on, after tons and tons of discovery is conducted, changes their mind and does that. And that's the only time they did that. And so I looked at the Fourth Court of Appeals opinion, and in the brief, the Sun cites one Fourth Court of Appeals opinion, and that was, and you'll see it in there, they didn't really talk about it a lot, but it was Metco's Mineral versus Maverick Aggregates. In that case, the trial court ended up saying, well, you did waive arbitration, or do you just go to trial? Because the motion to compel arbitration was filed, right before the trial. I guess in that sense, sort of similar to this case. But that case went up to the Fourth Court of Appeals, and the Fourth Court of Appeals said, I'm sorry, we're going to reverse the ruling of the trial court and demand the parties go to arbitration because, no depositions were taken. And that's the same as our case. No depositions were taken in this case. And no significant pretrial rulings have been made. And that's the same as our case. And then I found a case in 2023 from the Fourth Court of Appeals. And it's the Fritz Management Company versus Alportis Construction. And in that case, the trial court had found waiver in the Fourth Court of Appeals. And then the case went up on appeal, and the Fourth Court of Appeals in that case said, no, we're not going to find waiver here. And that was a situation where the suit was filed in 2012. The motion to compel arbitration wasn't filed until 2015. And the court overruled the trial court in its rulings where it found the motion to compel should be there. Now, I read the cases cited by Sun. I mean, and there's no Supreme Court case. But the cases cited by Sun to say, well, this is kind of supporting our implied
waiver.
Substantial waiver argument. And the cases are kind of like the Perry Holmes versus Cole case. They're extreme. And one of the cases they cite, and I went through all of them, and notably none of them are from the Fourth Court of Appeals, but I went through all of them. And one of them that I think is significant is the Courtright versus the Allied Custom Homes. And that's it is a 2022 case out of Houston. But this is what's different. If you compare that case to our case, you see That case is more like the Perry Homes versus Cole than our case. In that case, the trial court had rendered two TROs and two injunctions. He'd also appointed a receiver, issued some protective orders, and ruled twice on motions for summary judgment. I mean, he didn't just casually rule on just miscellaneous, discovery motions or this, that, and the other, which we don't even have in this case. He's ruling on very substantial issues like TROs and receiverships. And in that case, the Houston Court of Appeals found, we're going to find implied waiver. And, in reading the Cartwright case, I can kind of see why that happened. But that case really doesn't have anything to do with our case. And I kind of got the same impression in reviewing all their other cases. And there was a case out of the El Paso Court of Appeals, 2020, the Truly versus Martinez. But in that case, I noticed they'd taken six depositions and a deposition by written question. And ours none. Six versus none. The Wade Pounds versus Rothy, that was an estate case. I can kind of see where that one happened too. That's another one out of the Houston Court of Appeals. But in that case, the guy moved for summary judgment. The summary judgment's denied. And then after the ruling on the summary judgment, then he said, I'm going to file a motion to compel arbitration. That's a distinction between our case. That didn't happen. The BBX operating versus AM fluoride, that's another case where they tried to enforce a Rule 11 agreement, and the motion to enforce was denied. And then after they get that ruling, then they file the motion to compel arbitration. Again, that's not what happened here. But I think the significant thing, to me anyhow, was that none of those cases that actually did find waiver were out of the Fourth Court of Appeals. They were all either El Paso, Fort Worth, Beaumont, or Houston. None of them out of the Fourth Court of Appeals. And I looked at every single case that dealt with this issue out of the Fourth Court of Appeals, and they all compelled arbitration. And then I looked at the Supreme Court to what the existing law is, and the only thing I could find is that Perry Homes versus Cole. And those are all very, very extreme cases. I kind of revert back to what I say in the brief. This is a case where no depositions were taken, and it's the very first trial set. I mean, what's maybe going on the Sun side after waiver is, this 46 months. But they're asking this court to adopt a rule that, if 46 months goes by, then you for sure got that implied waiver. And that's not really the law. And I think if you just roll through it and compare this to the other cases, the one case in the Supreme Court, the zero cases in the Fourth Court of Appeals, the court's going to find that these parties just need to go to arbitration and arbitrate.
But Appley has argued that you did more than, just minimal stuff, as you seem to be suggesting, that there was actually several times where there was a request for affirmative relief. And if there is, in that case, there's case law that they've relied on saying that, that's an important factor for us to consider.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but maybe you need to look at when that was. Was this in 2019? Was it in 2020? Was it in 2021?
Why does that matter?
Because I think if the 46 months is gone, if we're approaching trial and then, there's this statement of, I'm going to go ahead and submit this counterclaim just because the time's running. And it's even after we filed the motion to compel arbitration. I cited a case that I think is important. It was a Supreme Court case. I can't remember, but it's in my brief, where a guy actually filed a motion to compel arbitration. The trial court denied it. They went through the whole trial. And then he ended up just appealing regular appeal to the Court of Appeals as opposed to the interlocutory appeal, a portion about the denial of the motion to arbitrate.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the Supreme Court ruled, you're right, it should have gone to arbitration. And then the kind of the theory behind their rule was, look, we don't really look at what happened post-motion to compel arbitration. like, for instance, a trial. You think, well, you go to a trial, you obviously waive the arbitration. But that was their theory, is we don't really look at actions taken post-motion to compel arbitration. And that's what I think Sun's doing when they say, well, you filed a counterclaim. Well, the counterclaim came after we filed the
finish your thought, please.
If that's okay. It came after, the counterclaim did come after the motion to compel arbitration. So, and that's why I say that's significant. If the counterclaim came out in 2019, I think Sun has a pretty good argument. But if the counterclaim came in April of 2023, I think we're more along the lines of what that Supreme Court is.
Okay.
Is there any other questions?
Not at this time. Thank you, but you'll have your time that you're reserved for rebuttal.
Good morning, please. Forbes.
Good morning.
Power's arguments can be summarized as follows. First, they say that our motion for summary judgment in 2023 was the first time Power won the arbitration clause and that we hid the clause from Power. Then they focus on our actions and our inactions and say that these require us to arbitrate. Next, they say waiver no longer exists under Bonsmara. That's the case that he was just talking about. Counsel cannot recall the name of the case. That's Bonsmara. They next argue that the passage of time alone is not enough. Then they say if this case doesn't match two facts in Perry Holmes, there's no waiver. And finally, they say Sun had to call witnesses to prove this. When you read their brief, those are the arguments that they make over and over in the brief. Every one of those arguments either has no support in the law, no support in the record, or both. So let's start with the easy ones first, and the court's already pointed a couple of these out. Sun's motion for summary judgment was not the first time Power won with the arbitration clause, and we didn't hide it from Power. As the court already recognizes, Power signed that contract back in 2000. Texas Supreme Court authority, not just some authority that's out there, Texas Supreme Court authority says that a party that signs a contract that includes an arbitration clause is on notice of the clause as of the execution of the contract, 19 years before suit was filed. As the court also recognized, in 2020, 3 years before the motion to compel was filed, Power identified the contract as material to this litigation in response to discovery. They also filed affirmative defenses based upon the contract, and they filed counterclaims before they filed the motion to compel arbitration, not just after, before, too, under the contract. Power was very well aware of this arbitration clause. That argument has no merit. They then say waiver no longer exists under Bonsmara. That's an incorrect reading of the case. Bonsmara is very specifically focused on appellate jurisdiction. The majority opinion expressly states that the case did not address waiver by litigation conduct. The court was not looking at waiver by litigation conduct. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because there's no question that Power engaged in significant litigation on the merits even after it filed its motion to compel, which is unprecedented. I found no proof for that. Next, they argue that the passage of time alone is not enough. We're not suggesting that the passage of time alone dictates a waiver finding in this case. However, when you look at the 8-item rubric that comes out of the Texas Supreme Court, the time that it took a party to file a motion to compel is included in the first factor, and it's included in the 8th factor. In this case, we were 4 years into the litigation, 29 days before the trial, before Power filed its motion to compel. Under the case law, that was an impermissible delay.
There were no depositions taken in this during that time, though?
There were not. However, Your Honor, please recall, as you can see from the chart, we provided the court with a 6-page chart in this case showing you all the litigation activity. A large amount of it happened in 2019. Power was seeking merits discovery from Sun. They were seeking documents. They were filed RFPs, motions for production, or a request for production, admissions, everything you can imagine. Depositions alone is not the litmus test for whether discovery is being conducted. When you look at a lot of the cases that we have cited in our brief, quite a few of them are Texas Supreme Court opinions. Paper discovery is as much a part of the analysis as is whether or not depositions have been taken.
And was it y'all's intent, you're prepared to go to trial without depositions?
We filed a notice of the intent to take the deposition of the corporate rep of Power prior to the motion to compel arbitration having been filed. Power filed a motion to quash that notice and said, King's X, it's 4 years into the litigation. We're so close to trial, it's too late now for you to seek the deposition of our corporate rep. Then later, and it's in the record, Power files a letter. All of these were filed with the court. Power files a letter with Sun and tells him again, you waited too long to seek my people's deposition, but you know what? Since you've asked for it, we want your guys' deposition too. And then in the record, you can see a long list of documents that Power wanted our corporate rep to bring to that deposition. So depositions were getting teed up, and again, before any kind of motion to compel arbitration was filed, and that is all in this record. You can see it for yourself. Power's next two arguments can be addressed together, and they kind of go with what we're talking about here. They're focusing on us. When you look at their brief, they've got Sun's actions, Sun's inactions, and they contend that somehow we were prevented from objecting to arbitration because of things we did or did not do. They also say that if the case doesn't match two items in Perry Homes, which is the plaintiff moved to compel arbitration after objecting to arbitration, somehow there's no waiver. The case law doesn't support that. And the biggest problem Power has is they failed to read this case properly. They have not run the waiver rubric that the case law provides. Perry Homes, G.T. Leach out of the Texas Supreme Court lists the 8-item rubric that a party is supposed to analyze when you try to determine whether there's been waiver by substantial litigation. When you look at Powell's brief, they give you the list and then they stop there. And then they start talking about Sun. They have not talked about any of these 8 factors. The Supreme Court holds that the party demanding arbitration, if they've waived the right to compel by substantially participating in the litigation, no arbitration can be compelled. So again, the focus is on Power. The focus is not on Sun. And again, there are 8 factors to determine, and Power didn't discuss any of them. So let's talk about what those 8 factors are. The length of delay in seeking to compel, any reason for the delay, and whether the movement was aware of the agreement during that delay. 4-year delay, false stated reason for why they didn't seek to compel by saying we did the contract and then they signed in 2000. And then awareness, and again, they were aware of the clause since 2000. Also, Power admits in their brief that we, Sun, filed a motion for summary judgment. It was set for hearing, and then Power filed their motion to compel arbitration. We were deep, deep, deep into this case at that point. The next item is the amount of discovery the movement Power conducted before seeking to compel arbitration and whether that related to the merits. Power admits that they received over 1,500 documents from us. There is in this record a letter from Power to Sun telling us that it was going to object to a bunch of documents that it contends were not produced. They were going to object at trial. And they accused us of potential trial by ambush. There is no question that deep into this case in April of 2023, Power was making all indications that they were going to trial. They were litigating this case on the merits. They had sought substantial discovery. Our timeline, by the way, back in 2019, shows repeated demands by Power from Sun for documents. That's 2019. Counsel has suggested that everything that happened in 2019 is inconsequential. I beg to differ. If you look at the record and you look at the chart that we provided, for a solid year, it was activity after activity by Power in this case. Power had waived arbitration back in 2019, let alone in 2023. The next item, the third item in the rubric, is whether any discovery obtained would be useful or available in arbitration. We cited cases to show that the courts are aware of the fact that the discovery procedure is different, whether you're in trial or you're in arbitration, and courts have found waiver when the party seeking to arbitrate has obtained all of this discovery that they likely would not have received in arbitration. Again, 1,500 plus documents just as a start in this case. Next, whether the movement sought a judicial disposition on the merits, pleaded affirmative claims or counterclaims. Power did all of that. They sought affirmative relief from the trial court and said, Sun can't have attorney's fees from us. They filed affirmative defenses seeking to take nothing judgment from Sun. They then filed counterclaims, pre-motion to compel arbitration, amended those counterclaims, pre-motion to compel arbitration. Then after
what type of counterclaim? What was the counterclaim?
Under the JOA, they were suggesting that they were entitled to their own contract breaches. And then they were also bringing, I think, some negligence claims. So Sun filed its own answer to that and said, King's X, under the contract, there's an exculpatory clause. And the only thing that you can sue us for under the contract is gross negligence and willful misconduct.
So all of the claims going back and forth are all based on the contract.
Well, they also sued us, Power, also sued Sun for breach of fiduciary duty. That's in here too.
Okay.
But ultimately, what's interesting is then we filed our question, after we filed our motion for summary judgment, Power amended again and alleged the willful misconduct and the gross negligence. And that was after they filed a motion to compel arbitration. So as I say, they're still litigating, and it's merits litigation all the way to the end. Then the next item in the rubric is the extent to which the movement engaged in pretrial matters on the merits as opposed to arbitrability. And again, as we've been discussing this morning, as the court can see from the record and from our brief, Power was actively litigating his case with gusto since 2019. They filed motions, they filed pleadings, they filed memoranda, trial documents. They sought and demanded responses to substantial merits discovery and obtained that merits discovery. All of that activity is shown in the chart in our brief, and you can see it for yourself from the clerk's record. Even just the index to the clerk's record, there's 4 pages of activity in this case. Item 6 in the rubric is time and expense the parties dedicated to litigating in court. As you can see, the trial court took judicial notice of the file at Sun's request. Every single thing that was done in this case up until 29 days before trial was litigating this case in the trial court. Whether the arbitration would duplicate activity already completed in the process, because it was 29 days to trial, all the pretrial deadlines had expired. The case was ready to go to trial. And then it was 12 days before trial before the motion was actually heard. So all the pretrial deadlines having expired, every bit of the activity that happened over that 4 years of litigation was going to have to go all over again in arbitration. And the last item is the anticipated trial date, which was 29 days away. Under Perry Holmes, the Supreme Court held that 1 month before trial is considered the end of trial, and it's too late. We cited cases under every one of these 8 elements to show this court why Power has checked every box. They checked all 8 of these boxes, not just 1, not just 2, all of them. In addition, when you read Perry Holmes, not to focus on 2 items, but take a look at the rest of it. That motion to compel was 14 months into litigation, 1 month before trial, and extensive discovery had been completed. The movement had requested and received extensive discovery. All of those things are identical to this case. Perry Holmes found waiver. The court should find waiver in this case as well.
Now, appellant has also argued that you failed to show prejudice. Now, I know you're familiar with the Morgan v. Sundance case out of the U.S. Supreme Court that dispensed with that element.
Yes, Your Honor.
As far as I'm aware, no court of appeals And Texas has adopted that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, I did a search in the Texas Supreme Court to try to see if I could find the case cited in some briefing to get a sense of where it sits, because as you point out, it's not cited in any of the cases that any of us has cited. I couldn't find it cited in any Texas released opinion either. So it looks like, from what I can gather, there's one or two cases that have teed the issue up. And the question for the Supreme Court is, this is, looks like a federal procedural issue. How does that play in Texas state court? Right. So that has not yet been determined. But I agree with you that the U.S. Supreme Court has held that prejudice is not part of the rubric when it comes to a waiver of an arbitration agreement. But setting aside that case, if it's appropriate to do so, I know it's the United States Supreme Court case, we don't know how it plays in Texas.
Right.
What I can tell you is two things. One, when you look at Power's brief, they haven't really briefed prejudice. They've dropped a couple of items in there that say that we were supposed to call witnesses, but that's all we said. I would consider that we've got a waiver by failure to brief situation on the prejudice part of this. But beyond that, on the merits, what they're arguing is wrong. Perry Holmes holds that the non-movement need only show that prejudice occurred, not precisely how much it all was. The undisputed facts in the record will show prejudice. Detailed proof is not required. These are all things the Supreme Court held in Perry Holmes. And in fact,
well, it's the fact that you were prepared and ready to go to trial and had done all of this discovery enough to show prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Actually, I was going to continue that in Perry Holmes, the court held it's easier to prove prejudice when the record shows the movement engaged in pretrial activity inconsistent with seeking arbitration, which is exactly what Power did here. We've gone over it and over it. The court has heard all of that. In addition, Sun, because it asked the court to take judicial notice of the file, also showed and argued that its damages were increasing during all of this waiver. While Phoenix Power continued to gin up the litigation, Sun continued to incur expenses. Sun pointed to its amended pleadings in the case, which attached evidence to support that its expenses continued to increase. And we cited a Dallas case of Green versus Velocity Investments that talks about the notion that when you file sort of a Hail Mary motion like this, and it also sort of prevents the plaintiff from ultimately recovering the damages to which they may be entitled, that is an additional indicia of prejudice. The last thing I want to point out is there's another Texas Supreme Court case called Lalonde versus Gosnell. It's cited in our brief, Lalonde versus Gosnell. It's a 2019 decision, so it's post Perry Holmes and it's post GT Leach. Now, it's a certificate of merit case, but the waiver rubric is the same. And in that case, before the engineers filed a motion to dismiss, because the certificate of merit was not filed as required, they were 3 years into the lawsuit, 18 months into active litigation, weeks before trial, the engineers had demanded discovery, they had responded to discovery, they had asserted affirmative defenses, and they sought affirmative relief. All the things that Power did in this case. And the Supreme Court held, and I quote, even assuming none of the above factors, the same way effect, is dispositive on its own, the extent of discovery, the proximity to trial, the nearly unprecedented length of delay, all point in the same direction. The engineers intended to litigate the case on the merits, despite their right not to do so. The court held, considering the totality of the circumstances, which as the court knows, is sort of the universe in which we view this, considering the totality of the circumstances, the engineers impliedly waived the right to seek dismissal. There are also forum non-convenient or forum selection clause cases that are instructive in this area. All of these kinds of cases all assess the same waiver rubric. And I would venture to say that as time is going by, I think the courts are getting much more pragmatic about this and they're finding waiver more frequently. I would say that we don't want to lose the forest for the trees. We know waiver when we see it. The trial court knew waiver when the trial court saw it. This court gives deference to the trial court on its fact findings. They are implied because Powell did not seek any findings of fact or conclusions of law or anything of that nature in this case. And so we would suggest to you that, back to the prejudice argument, we didn't need to call witnesses. The record speaks for itself. Sun has cited no case that says we're supposed to call witnesses, and they can't because they don't exist. We would submit to the court that that's the only argument that Sun has raised on prejudice. So the prejudice element, that issue can be overruled. So in the end, the courts throughout the state are finding waiver of arbitration. This court should uphold the trial court's decision that the arbitration motion that was filed 29 days before trial and after its 4 years of litigation was just too late. And ultimately, Power has not applied the proper law and the proper analysis to really assess the trial court's ruling. So in that regard as well, we believe that Power's issues should be overruled. We're asking the court to affirm the trial court's ruling.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Very good. Just a couple of things. Opposing counsel cited the Dallas Court of Appeal case of Green. It is a 2022 case, but I would like to point out that that motion to compel arbitration was on the day of trial. The guy showed up on the day of trial, asked for a continuance, the judge denied it, and goes, oh, by the way, I have a motion to compel arbitration. And he's geared up for trial. That's not our case. And the Fourth Court of Appeals, I know she said, well, the Court of Appeals are really starting to find waiver, but not the Fourth Court. And the recent case I talked about is the Fritz MGMT versus Alportis Construction. It's a Lexus 2023 case, and it was just decided May 29th. 2023, and the trial court had actually ruled that there was waiver. The Fourth Court of Appeals reversed and rendered. But I think some important stuff, and I think what needs to be remembered is that is stated in this opinion, in close cases, the strong presumption against waiver should govern. Any doubts regarding waiver should be resolved in favor of arbitration. And I think those are two important points. The presumption is strong, and they use that word in Cole, and the Fourth Court has used it in its opinion. It's a strong presumption. Well, what does strong mean? I mean, I guess it's better than a weak presumption. I don't really know, but when we talk about the burden, we know this. In Cole and also in the Fourth Court opinion, they say it's a heavy burden. So we know that not just the burden is on Sun, but it's a heavy burden. Is it an insurmountable burden? The Supreme Court has found one time that they met their burden. The Fourth Court of Appeals has not. Found one time, and that's the law that we're governed by. So when I look at the case law, I say, well, is this if the issue is waiver by substantial implication of the rule, does this case fall in the Perry Holmes versus Cole? No, not really. Does this case fall in any of the Fourth Court of Appeals? Well, there are none. Now, the Fourth Court of Appeals has never found waiver by implied implication. And in fact, they overruled the trial court the two times this issue happened. I actually found 16 times, but all the times have found with respect to have found that you need to go to arbitration.
I'm sorry, you said you found 16 times in the Fourth Court of Appeals or statewide?
No, Fourth Court. I only looked at the Fourth Court to determine. I found 16 different cases where the issue was addressed with respect to waiver. Actually, I found a little bit more than that in my research, but the other cases that looked like this, the Perry versus Paul was mentioned just for other propositions.
Okay. Okay. 16, where the fourth court has found that there was
no
waiver. Okay.
And sometimes it would be affirming with the trial court ruling. And other times it would be reversing with the trial court.
Right.
The trial court would be ruling through waiver, and the fourth court said, no waiver. Sorry. There was one other thing that I thought was important, and that was when someone was talking about, there was the production of this 1,500 pages worth of documents, which when most of them were alleged, you couldn't read. And then the deposition request, although a deposition was never had, looking for summary judgment, this is a substantial invitation of all this stuff, and I think we've got to put it in there. All this stuff happened in April of 2023. It didn't happen any time before there. And why I think that's significant is, we keep going back to, it's 46 months of doing nothing. But, it's the plaintiff who brings the case. If the plaintiff is suing on a sworn account or for invoices and stuff like that, they usually attack the contract that wasn't done in this case. They usually attach the invoices that weren't on dates, wasn't done in this case. I mean, none of this stuff was done in this case until April of 2023. And that's when the motion to compel arbitration was had. I mean, it was really just nothing was happening all this time. And then, it was cranked up. And then that's when the motion to compel arbitration was filed. I think if this court, follows the precedence of the Fourth Court of Appeals, they should reverse the trial court and just tell the parties to go to arbitration and whatever happens there happens.
We are bound by that, by the way, following the precedent of the court to which, the case is transferred from. And that's why we're here, because if we're going to hear a case, we also hear it in the district that it's transferred from by statute. So we will follow the precedent of the Fourth Court.
I guess I made a good argument.
Thank you very much. The case will be under submission.